All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Technical Knockout, the hardcore casual MMA podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on?
Today, we got a special episode for y'all. We're bringing in the heavyweight from ONE Championship, Odie Delaney.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yes, sir. We're going to get an interview done. We're going to talk about some fights. It's going to be a good time, y'all. Let's do it.
We got the witness on.
Hey, bear witness. All right, Odie, tell us a little bit about yourself for the fans that might not be familiar.
Oh, geez, man. I don't even know where to start. That's a big question. I was born and raised in Alaska and bullied a lot, and then got forced to move to Florida. So I got into wrestling. I actually, Jordan, my first like really official wrestling started right there at Niceville, where you're going to be coaching. So I was there.
Very cool.
Yep. For my freshman year. And then wrestled at South Walton High School, was a first state champ, did well at senior nationals, got a full ride to the Citadel. Yeah, ultimately, I've just been a martial arts junkie since I could walk.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and then just one thing led to another, got into pro fighting, undefeated pro currently, and now I'm just running a gym. So yeah, there's there's just too much to go into all at once, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you. That transitions well into my next question, which was how'd you get into martial arts in the first place? You know, you said that you were a junkie from the start, but was it somebody in your family? Was it like your friends, or was it just being in Florida in general?
Well, up in Alaska, I had a lot of cousins that were wrestlers that beat me up constantly. When I got to Florida, I really wanted to be back in Alaska with my dad. And I was kind of forced to move to Florida, and I was an angry little kid. And I don't know, I found wrestling was something I could throw myself into. Like I said, I was at Niceville, under Grant Myers, and, yeah, man, just got in that room and got addicted to it. So that's kind of what made it take off.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of, martial artists have a similar story where, you know, once they got on the mats and, you know, started to get into it, they fell in love, you know? So, yeah. I'm happy to hear that, you know. It's awesome that you stuck with it. It's awesome that you you know, made a pro career out of it and now are owning your own gym. What's the like how's that transition like going from, I mean, you're still competing, of course, but you know, going from like being a full time competitor to training your own gym, I'm sure it's very rewarding.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So yeah, and I'm 34, so I'm starting to get a little bit older. And I've seen a lot of athletes kind of wait too long, I think, to get out of the fight game. You know, head damage is a real thing.
Yeah.
And I don't have a ton of pro fights, but I do have a lot of miles as far as martial arts goes. Like, I've been doing this since I could walk. And I kind of got to the MMA game late. You know, I was, I didn't start getting into the MMA until my late 20s. So, yeah, going into the coaching though, I've found that I'm extremely passionate about it. I love it just as much as competing, if not more. And, you know, helping guys kind of avoid some of the pitfalls that are in the martial arts industry feels good, you know, kind of giving them the truth about the industry from the onset. I think that I'm going to be able to guide them into success, you know, kind of avoid the stuff I've done.
So, Odie, let me ask you. So, you and I were wrestled in the same area, and then I know you went off to the Citadel All-Americans up there, and that's when I kind of lost contact with you. How did you make this jump from being a D1 All-American to an MMA fighter? Can you bridge that gap for me?
Yeah, so let's see here. So right out of college, I didn't really think I was going to be doing combat sports anymore because I was getting into law enforcement. I had just got my undergraduate degree. I went into my law enforcement career. I was actually involved in a pretty, you know, a bad shooting when Dylan Roof went into the AME church. I had suffered some PTSD from that and some panic attack disorder. And, you know, my life, martial arts had been out of my life probably for 4 or 5 years, you know, in my mid-20s. When I realized that law enforcement wasn't really going to work out for me, I kind of had to, you know, start from baseline and look at my life and see what I had to offer this world. And, you know, I had always loved martial arts and it had kind of been calling me back. And, you know, that was something that I could do. It's something I had control and power over, which felt good. So I walked into my local BJJ gym and just got started. Went to my first tournament like the first week I I was rolling and went and won it in Atlanta. just wrestling guys, not even using really? Jiu-Jitsu. So
you're telling me the D1 guy that went and wrestled in the beginning division won it?
Yeah, dude, these guys were mad at me. They're like, you're not a
white belt. I would be too. I mean, well, I personally would be psyched, but if I'm like, just get them like, oh, cool, I'm going to go to this novice tournament, and then I come up against you.
Yeah, they were not happy about that. But I picked up jiu-jitsu quick. I think my wrestling style kind of worked for jiu-jitsu. I was never like the super explosive, muscly wrestler. I was always kind of slow, methodical, kind of made you feel like you were swimming in honey. And that kind of worked when I, transitioned into the jiu-jitsu world. So, yeah, man, like when I knew I was going to be in law enforcement, I had to pick a different path, and I landed on MMA and just kind of went, head first into it.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. You've been an advocate. You touched on it just now, but you've been an advocate for mental health awareness throughout your career, and as long as you've had a platform to talk about it, you've been very vocal about your own struggles and how martial arts has been like instrumental in helping you overcome some of those hurdles. Mm-hmm. First off, I think it's awesome and super important and admirable that you use your platform for good in that way. I think a lot of people, would be quick to just be braggadocious or, make themselves appear like they're not human. I love that you took like the other path, to show that like even somebody as big and strong as you are and like as accomplished can still have, those kind of troubles. So it really humanizes the thing, the whole, the aspect behind it, the stigma, if you will.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, man, the thing is we're all in this boat together, my heart kind of reaches out to young men who, in the sports world, in the media world, music, everything, there's not really a lot of good role models that, do speak out about these things, and kind of voice that it's okay to struggle and it's okay to have doubts and get in those, those points of hopelessness in life. And yeah, man, like I don't really care what people think about me. I never have, even since I was real little. I've always been a big goofball, fun-loving guy. I've never tried to be the cool kid. I've never changed for anybody for any reason. So I've kind of allowed that to translate into my professional career. And I've noticed that to this day, man, I get texts from guys struggling hard that for some reason they feel comfortable talking to me about it. Maybe because I have been so vocal. And it's just, I've been able to make some huge impacts and, actually I think save a couple people. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. That's brought a lot of value to my own life, man. I mean, that makes doing that for people just kind of, it helps me too. It's like, it's kind of beneficial for both parties,
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to just keep that up.
That's awesome, man. Do you think obviously martial arts gave you the platform to reach out to these kind of people, but do you think it's helped you like training, competing, teaching, any aspect of it? How has it helped you like pull you out of the dark places, if you feel like it has?
Like just talking about it or the martial arts, just the martial arts aspect? Because
like the actual training, competing, teaching, like
that's definitely helped a lot. I mean, especially when it comes to panic attack disorders, one thing that people don't understand about those is a lot of that is like psychophysical. So if you don't exercise and you're very stagnant, your panic attacks are just going to be worse and more frequent. If you're giving your body an outlet, like jiu-jitsu, like wrestling, like MMA, and you're getting that like physical exhaustion every day, and you're using your mind to learn the techniques and avoid getting hit and all this, it actually kind of, I know it sounds funny, but it kind of wears your body out to the point where like it doesn't have the energy for a panic attack, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
So it's, martial arts saved my life. I'm gonna go ahead and say that straight up. I mean, when I was right out of law enforcement, right after that shooting and having two panic attacks a day, it wasn't until I got into a jiu-jitsu gym and was training 3-4 times a day that those panic attacks started to go away, started to subside. So yeah, it's been everything to me for sure.
That's awesome, man. I'm happy to hear that. You know, I think there's like this, I mean, maybe not amongst the martial arts community, but I think there's this stigma amongst the general population that martial arts is, you know, for people that are aggressive or, you know, like anything like that, that it might bring in some negative aspects of people's lives. But I think it's been a healthy outlet for, you know, millions of people.
Yeah, I actually find yourself, the opposite. You know? I find that the highest level guys that I'm around and train with, there are oftentimes like the most humble and gentle people because they've been humbled. You know, when you get the crap beat out of you enough, you stop acting that way, you know?
100% Yeah. I think that's been my experience too. Like, you meet some of the nicest people you can in the gym, you know, I've been choked out and beat up by some real sweethearts, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move into a different subject, talk about the heavyweight division as a whole and just, you know, heavyweight MMA altogether. You know, it's not a division that's generally known for its high level grapplers. You know, I think a lot of people, when they think about heavyweights, they think about guys just going in there trying to take each other's heads off. As someone whose expertise is on the mats and somebody with as much experience as you have in the wrestling and jiu-jitsu world, you think it's fair to say you've got a leg up on most heavyweights due to that background?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think that you're right. It is the biggest weakness in the heavyweight division in all promotions, really. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is wrestling is really, really hard. And I've been to a lot of high level gyms, and the patterns I've noticed is that people just kind of put wrestling and jiu-jitsu kind of on the back burner, and it just, everyone just focuses on the striking. But yeah, if you're intelligent enough to see that, you can definitely take advantage of that hole in the heavyweight game. I would say that the newest generation coming up, though, that's going to be changing. Because you got a lot of guys that are a lot younger than me coming up in the heavyweight division that that are definitely bringing the wrestling game. And I think that you're going to see that one-dimensional heavyweight start to phase out pretty quickly. I mean, even the top guys like Francis Ngannou, he's seen the writing on the wall. He was working his wrestling so hard, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, and used it against Cyril to great effect. So yeah, you're gonna see a change, I think. I think we're on the last years of that heavyweight just banger only mentality for sure.
Yeah, for sure. There's a couple fights coming up we'll talk about on the second segment where you know, we see that kind of dynamic play out where it's a brawler versus a more technical grappler. So that's, I'm excited to break those down. But Jordan, you have any questions for Odie? You want
to? You were kind of talking to me about where you're trying to angle for your next fight or problems that you're having with one. I don't know if you can get into that.
Oh yeah, I can talk about anything I want to. So with one championship, I wouldn't say the relationship soured. Like ultimately the pay on my contracts and the fights that they were offering, it just didn't really make sense for me. And the problem is fighters need to unionize. That's something that just has to happen, because as the fighter, you have literally zero power in negotiation. Like, they can just not honor the contract and there's really nothing you can do about it. You know what I mean? They failed to get me a fight within the contractual period. So they breached the contract. I said I wanted out. So they let me out. So I'm going to not be fighting for one right now. I'm open to it. If they offer me another fight for the right money, I'll do it. But honestly, with my gym growing as fast as it is, I mean, we're almost up to 100 members in 3 months.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. They'd have to offer me really good money to do that again. 'Cause I'm just really loving what I'm doing right now.
I heard Francis Ngannou's looking for someone to fight for Real Bug Bunny.
Francis Ngannou? Oh shoot, yeah. Man, I'd fight him. I love that guy. I mean, I would love to get in there and fight that guy. He's kind of a hero, man. I mean, to the whole MMA community, you know. It would be an honor to fight him. But yeah, he the way that he stood up to the UFC, and then, you know, Dana pretty much said that he made the most horrible mistake of his life, and then now he's going to be a living legend for all time because of what he did to Fury, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. the linear boxing champion in the fans'
eyes.
Oh my
god, dude, I can't stop thinking about it, man.
Let's go get into it.
I kind of want to touch on that unionization.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was really happy that you brought that up because it was something that I wanted to discuss. I know that a lot of heavyweights a lot of people in ONE in general, but a lot of heavyweights in particular have had trouble finding fights. And I know their heavyweight roster may not be as, you know, deep as some of the other promotions. Mm-hmm. So I was curious, like, I'm happy that you touched on it because I saw that your last fight was in like June of last year. And before that, you were pretty active. So I was like, you know, I'm sure that there's some kind of contract dispute or something. As far as the healthcare and unionization and, you know, things that Francis Ngannou was fighting for UFC fighters and for fighters in general, I think you can attest to it, you know, personally, but I think we can all agree that it's super important that fighters, you know, try to unionize. They've tried a few times with like the IMMAAF and stuff like that. And it seems to have kind of went nowhere because, you know, the promotions won't offer you fights. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I don't know if there's any insight you can give on that or like inside detail. I know you're not a union attorney or anything like that.
No. Yeah, but I can definitely give insight. I think it's going to have to come from people that no longer have skin in the game. And that's the thing is you can't really expect fighters that are relying on these promotions to live, to feed their families, to step up and speak out. I mean, that's just not realistic. Like you said, the second they say something, it's like you'll never get a fight again. It's going to have to come from retired fighters, coaches, people that are in the industry that care about the fighters that, you know, don't have a financial stake. You know, that's going to have to put something like that together. I even thought about looking into it myself. You know, I'm not a, I look like a big dumb athlete, but I've actually got a brain and, you know, I'm starting to look into some things myself and try to figure that out, figure out that puzzle. The thing is some of the unions that have tried to come together, very profit driven, you can kind of tell in their mission statements and their documents they put forward as they get started. It's like, okay, this is like the kind of unionization that we don't like to see, but I think if it was done correctly, that where it was truly just for the benefit of the athletes, you could get something finally put together, and it'll be something slow that'll have to, you know, start grassroots and build over time. But I definitely think it can be done. You just can't expect it to come from active fighters. That is not going to happen. You know?
Yeah. I hear you. I think it's really cool how, you know, we've seen a lot of fighters get shelved for these kind of talks. But now we're seeing a couple of champions, you know, UFC champions, high level, you know, high profile athletes come out and talk about fighter pay and unionization and healthcare. You know, Francis Ngannou obviously being the most prominent example, but recently Sean Strickland has also been vocal about.
He got his mic cut. Did you see that clip?
Wow.
What?
He was talking. Yeah, he was talking about it. It was like at a rodeo or something. And then he kind of got on it. It's the subject started like a guy asked, like, hey, my son wants a career in MMA. You know, do you have any recommendations? And he's like, yeah, don't. And then he said, you know, he did the Sean Strickland. Here's the thing, guys. And then went on about 5 minutes. And they cut UFC Fight Pass cut it, but it was still live at the rodeo and everything.
Wow. But, wow.
So insane.
They don't like it for sure.
Oh, no, of course not. That's going to affect their bottom line. But, you know, the thing that I don't understand is I think it's going to be better for the fans, too, if something like this was done. Because, okay, think about any other sport. Even if your team's not doing well, like I'm a Bears fan. When have the Bears done anything in the last, you know, however? But the thing is, like, they're still around. I can still follow them. I can still be a fan. This whole thing where, like, a UFC fighter gets in, they lose two fights, and they're gone. You never see them again. It kind of makes it hard for the casual fan to, like, remember names, stick with a fighter, watch them do their thing through a career. I think if we had some unionization, had a little bit more longevity for these fighters in the programs, in the promotions, then you would have a fan base start to build a lot easier, if that makes sense.
Well, and to your point too about like these, it'd be better for these fighters, or usually the guys that, you know, come in, lose two and are out. I want to see that these fighters that I am so passionate about that, you know, I don't want to see them age really badly. You know what I mean? A la Frankie Edgar. We talk about, you know, Frankie Edgar's last couple fights. I don't like the thought of, like, you know, him fighting because he's thinking about his health care at 60, 70. Like, oh, I have to fight so I can put money back. Like, yeah, I would like to see some of these guys that are putting their bodies on the line consistently and are like fan favorites, because it's not always the champions that stick around. Like, if you're a fan favorite like Tony Ferguson, they'll keep you around to get knocked out four or five times. They've proven that.
Cowboy Cerrone, I mean, prime example, dude. He's a hero. I don't think he's ever had a title, you know?
No, not at least not in the UFC.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's tough, man, because you see these fighters that are, you know, on the wrong side of 40 and still taking these fights against young gunners. And, you know, it's obviously it's a financial thing. You know what I mean? And you'd hope that somebody like BJ Penn or Frankie Edgar, you know, even former champions like that would have a safety net or, you know, a security pad for after they retire. But the UFC just doesn't line people up that way, you know?
Yeah. You know, think about like guys like me, too. I love fighting and I would love to keep fighting. I'd love to make it my pro career. But at the end of the day, I've got two children and a wife that I have to take care of. The fight game as it is right now as an industry, it's like I can be in an 8 week, 10 week fight camp and then the promotion decides to back the date up or my opponent gets hurt or, you know, or this or that. It's like it's impossible to budget. It's impossible to save. Like everyone thinks all these guys are making tons of money and are just like, you know, like baseball or football players. It's just not the case. Like a lot of these guys, even at the highest level, are check to check. And that's insane because these guys are freak athletes generating millions and millions of dollars for these promotions and, you know, media networks. And yeah, it's just, it's a wild game, man.
Well, let me ask you this, Odie. So you have, with Wonder Boy a couple months ago, he had an event, you know, had his fight camp came in, make weight, and then his opponent misses weight and then says, no, I don't want to fight. I think I should be paid my show money because I showed up, made weight, and they ultimately didn't give him. Is that stuff that's on your mind as well as that stuff starts to happen?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's just another prime example.
I'd be pissed.
Oh my gosh, dude. And like the thing is, the fans don't see everything that goes in to a fight camp and how much money goes out. Like you're talking about the healthcare portion of it, but also like coaches, your food. Like I'm telling you, it's more expensive because you have to eat absolutely perfectly. Gym fees, man, you just taxes. By the time you get done with it, it's like these guys don't make enough. Especially with, you know, the state of our country with inflation and everything else. It's just, it's not a really good way to make a living right now. Now, if we had a union and there were some protections in place where, you know, obviously getting your entire fight purse, especially a guy at that level, hundreds of thousands of dollars, that's probably not realistic, but at least something, you know, at least not a $0, you know, at least something.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's like crazy or unmanageable for the UFC to offer fighters a working salary and then the fight pay as their bonuses, you know what I mean?
Like, and that's the thing is that would be so easy to do. And like 50,000. Whatever, you know, 50 grand enough to have an apartment and feed your kids. I mean, and make it a lot easier on everybody. Don't get me started on sponsorships. I mean, if these guys were able to go hunt their own sponsors and keep their sponsorship money, you would solve a lot of problems right there too. You'd have a lot more guys willing and able to fight for a lot longer.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be an even easier way for them to not cut into their profits and still have fighters be, you know, protected.
Man, I just need to start a promotion. I've been thinking about it. We'll
hell see. Yeah, man. Go for it. Like.
Hey, dude, we will be your commentators right off the bat. You got that solved.
Okay, dang. Good to know. Because, yeah, I'm thinking Pensacola, there's a huge market for it here.
Yeah, well, they do island fights, I believe, over in Pensacola, don't they?
Yeah. Dean Toole does island fights, but I think it can be done better. You know, that's no disrespect to island fights or Dean or any of those guys. It's just that's kind of the way I think. I always just like I watch what other people do and I'm like, man, maybe I could do that a little better. And I'm trying.
I mean, everything can be improved on.
That's how people grow. You know, it's competition.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, speaking of
love capitalism.
speaking of competition, is there anything that would bring Odie Delaney back into the ring? Would get the witness back out there?
They would have to make it worth my time because right now, I am making, and I'm not trying to brag, but I'm making way more money and way more consistent money in my gym than I would taking the time off for a fight camp and a fight. Yeah. I mean, by far. So at this point, it would be kind of hard. The thing is, I'm not a desperate fighter anymore. And that feels really good because all these guys are just desperate fighters. And it's like, take what I give you, you know, and that's not me anymore. And to get me back in there, yeah, it would take some cash, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man. Yeah, that's you know, ideally none of the fighters would be desperate, but that's the way that the machine is built from these promotions and the industry, you know what I mean? Forces fighters to take fights that they don't want to take short notice fights, you know, go to places that they wouldn't want to normally be in, you know what I mean? So I think it's important for fighters to have a backup plan, whether it be coaching or, a general career.
I have guys
that, like, we have to even talk about this because these are high level athletes. You know what
I
mean?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I have guys, you know, coming into my gym asking me, you know, hey, man, I'm in school right now to be, you know, a plumber or a cook or whatever. And I'm thinking about dropping out and going full time fighting. And I always tell them, don't, you know,
like, yeah.
You can, there's plenty of high level fighters that kept their day job and did very well. Stipe, I think, is still firefighting. You know, or at least he did, you know, well deep into the UFC. So I tell these guys, you know, stay in school, get your trade degree, you know, your trade special certifications, your degrees, whatever you're doing, keep doing that while you're training. It can definitely be done. And then you'll thank yourself if you get, you know, a serious injury or you at some point decide, hey, man, I'm having a kid and I need to take care of my family. You have something, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. That's never really a good idea in life.
Yeah,
it's the same advice that you would give a D1, D2 athlete. You know, it'd be like, hey, make sure you're taking care of your grades or.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm ready to get into the fight world. If you guys are, I'm excited to discuss some of these things going down.
Let's do it,
Jordan.
Man.
You have any more questions for Delaney before we get into the?
No, man. I'm excited because you and I haven't texted about this Fury and Ngannou mess.
Yeah, let's get right into it.